Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And good evening, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and the authors you love, who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. I want to first thank those joining us on the radio dial here at 92.3 FM. We also welcome our good friends joining us online worldwide through blogtalkradio.com. Whether you listen to us through our switchboard, our live chat, or even joining us through our podcast, we're glad to have all of you with us. We have a great hour coming up for you this evening. Glad you all could join us for it. To get things kicked off, we're going to be... Our next guest is Gar Apurovitz. And Gar has written this amazing book. I was telling some friends about it over the weekend, America Beyond Capitalism. And as I was saying just before we came back from that quick break, that, you know, at a time when partisanship, I think, has really caused us to get away from the issues where we can work together and create the country that we want, Gar's book helps us to understand that there is great work to be done, but that we can do it together. I'm very honored that he's joining us today on the program to talk about this journey, what it's like for him now with the second edition of the book out. Gar, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations Live.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for the book again, America Beyond Capitalism, the subtitle, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. Gar, you have become a respected voice, I think, by individuals because of, for one thing, your sensibility and also your urge to actually see something done. Can you kind of walk us through when you first started to see that you had a voice that you wanted to share when it comes to some of the big issues that we're discussing today in the world?
Well, I've come out of normal liberal politics in the North. I'm from Wisconsin, one of the industrial cities of Wisconsin, Racine, and I, for a long time, thought whatever we could do on the liberal side. I worked in the House and the Senate, and I still support that direction. But I've come to believe that we have to go well beyond what was done in the last 2 to 3 decades, partly because, you know, one of the muscle pieces of the progressive movement was the labor movement, and that's kind of declined in the last 30 years. It was at 35% of the labor force members of unions. It's now only about 11% and 7% in the private sector. So the strength has got to be built up alongside of the union structure. There's got to be new strength, and I think the way that's going to be developed, I think, is happening right out from underneath. Where you can't see it already in many parts of the country, there are hundreds, indeed thousands, of new structures that are democratizing the ownership of wealth, is the way I put it. For instance, there are co-ops building up that are not covered by the newspapers and press, but there are 140,000 Americans who are involved in co-ops and credit unions, and you just don't see that in the newspapers or on television. And there are about 13,000 worker-owned companies owned by the workers themselves. And again, changing, that's not the big corporations. That's building up a different kind of power that I think is really important to the future of the country. So I began to get a hold of the information on some of this, and it's guided a good deal of my thinking and where we might be going.
Yeah, and what I enjoyed so much, I think, Gar, about the book and why I really wanted to take my time to read it is because what you say in the book, and you actually discussing at the time Social Security and health care, but on page 186, I thought it was a statement you made in the book that I wanted to share with our readers because I think it goes to exactly what we see going on today with politics. You write this: given that neither side of the conservative-liberal debate appears to have much chance of dealing in a thoroughgoing way with the underlying problems, the prospect is likely to be one of continued frustration and political posturing. And that's what we've seen really on every big issue. There seems to be the American people who are supposed to have the voice. We somehow get caught up in the situation, as you talk about in the book, that these figures that we do elect end up becoming actors in their own play and sometimes writing their own script with their own agenda. What do you hope we're able to do? Because I'm all about working together. I think it's very important if we truly believe that we want this country to be the country that can be respected and also provides well for, you know, for its citizens. I believe we have to work together. What do you hope we can achieve by coming together and being able to discuss topics like this?
Well, the old kind of system is failing. You just described it in that sentence, is that the Republicans and Democrats are kind of stalemated. And what happens when that happens is the economic trends get worse and worse. Income distribution's gone down. The top 1% has gone from having about 10% of the income to it got up to 24% of the income, and now it's down just below 20 because of the recession. So and wages have been flat, you know, for a long, long time. A lot of people, the poverty level's gone up. That's what happens when the stalemate is going on. But what I think is also happening, and that's at a different level, and the newspapers and press don't cover it, partly because pain is increasing, partly because people know you have to try something new. There's a lot of activity at the state and local level around the country that isn't reported on. And what I hope about that, and there's some reason to hope because we've been following the long, long trends of this slow, steady development, I think we're looking at what I call the prehistory of the next progressive era. And by that I mean there are these buildups of worker-owned companies and co-ops I mentioned, but at the state level there are state banks being proposed. The state of North Dakota's got a public bank. Now, that's very different from a Wall Street bank. They don't speculate. They invest back in the state. And several states, 15 different states, have got legislation to do that kind of thing. There are other things like that. Another 15 states approximately have legislation to create single-payer health care. So we're seeing kind of, and this usually happens in history, something building up down at the grassroots level. You know, that's the way it happened before the New Deal. Most of the New Deal programs in the Roosevelt era, they were cooking, they were developing in the laboratories of the states and the cities that just below the surface. And when the right time came, really exciting new things happened. And I think that's the kind of hopeful side that, you know, I'm not a utopian optimist, but I do think there's some hope at the level of what's developing if you take the long view.
You, I want to say for those that are just tuning in either on the radio side of our program or online through blogtalkradio.com, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm speaking with Gar Perlovitz, and we're talking to him a little bit about his book, America Beyond Capitalism, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy, but also where we are today in our political climate. And Gar, you've mentioned a few times already in this conversation something that is frustrating, and that is some of the things that are not being discussed by the media. I've noticed I spent a great deal of the past couple of weeks finding out more about you because, quite frankly, for me, this new edition of your book was the first time I had heard of your work. So to see how you are able to bring people together to have these conversations, to have these dialogues, talk to us a little bit about what you feel as though our own responsibility is, because I have said on this show in the past over the years that I think sometimes we shirk our responsibilities as citizens. Once an election is over, we feel like, okay, we've elected somebody, we don't have to do anything. Talk to us about why you feel like it's so important that we stay actively involved in what's going on in the world around us, even for things that are not being heavily reported.
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. The democracy works only when individuals actually take responsibility. And one thing that prevents folks from doing it, I think, is people, they find it easy to say, and I understand why, well, you know, everything's getting worse. How do you fight all the powerful money and corporations in politics? And it's just too hard. Well, we all have a vested interest in pessimism. As long as you allow yourself to believe nothing can change, of course, you're not going to do anything because why bother?
Right.
So
right.
We have a vested interest, which gets it protects us. But I tell you, I'm from Wisconsin. I lived there during the McCarthy era. That's when Joe McCarthy was anti-communist, and nothing moved politically. Everyone was scared to move at all. And if you had said to them at that time, you know, try to do something, they'd say, well, it's crazy, you can't do anything here. And of course then came the 1960s, and the civil rights movement exploded, and the women's movement exploded, and the all of a sudden people weren't aware of what was going on beneath the surface. And that's certainly true of the civil rights era in the South, too. For a long, long time, if you'd said to people, you know, it's really important to do something, take responsibility, they would have said it's impossible in the 1930s and 40s. I write, as you probably saw in the book, that, and I meant it with great sincerity, my heroes truly are the civil rights workers, particularly in the 1930s and 1940s. That's when it was really hard. It was always hard, but that's when people had really to say, it looks dim, but still there's a chance if we work hard, we might lay the groundwork for something new and something better. And I think those people have as much should claim for the responsibility for what actually happened in civil rights as the 1960s folks.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. As someone who's, as you may know, from Mississippi, Mississippi is my home. I think you're exactly right. There are great lessons for us there. And I think for what I see, and I'm seeing it on the online side of our program as we're talking, Gar, for those joining us through blogtalkradio.com, the questions about where do we go? Because, you know, it's interesting where we are right now. Of course, it's an election year. But I read a book like yours, and I think there is hope, and I've always felt this way. There is reason to believe that we can move forward, that our best days are not behind us. But with the economy, and that's a big part of what you discuss in this book and how it affects everything else, if you were able to talk to the president, because I think at this point, even though it's an election year, President Barack Obama is the person who is in charge, What would you say it would take for us to really begin to see the change that we need, to really see the growth that we need in this country, and to help get the economy around?
Well, the first thing I'd say might surprise you. I'd say, you know, we don't have an economic problem. Hmm. We have a political problem about the economy. And the reason I say that is if you divided up the economy today, even in the middle of the recession, it produces today about $192,000 for every single family of four, even now. So this is a very rich economy even now. But how we manage it politically has been terrible and disastrous, and the president's had to face these problems in the House and Senate where the Republicans just blocking him. I would say, well, you've got to do the best you can with trying to go on with traditional programs and invest in rebuilding the schools and the housing of the country and the roads and the bridges as much as you can at the national level, given the blockages. But the real activity for the long haul is going to take us really to rebuild our cities and our jobs and our workplaces in ways that people can own. Let me give you an example of what I mean. In Cleveland, right in the middle of one of the poorest neighborhoods, 40% unemployment, is the neighborhood in Cleveland I'm thinking about, folks there have set up a series of very large-scale worker-owned cooperatives. There's a huge laundry, very, very advanced technically, one of the most advanced ecologically and technically industrial-scale laundry they've set up, owned by the workers as a cooperative. They've got a cooperative worker-owned solar installation company, it's about to put in more solar installation than already exists in the whole state of Ohio. And they're about to open a huge, huge solar and greenhouse with hydroponic development capable of producing about 3 million heads of lettuce a year. And these are just the first of several complex of worker-owned companies, co-ops. And they're linked together. So it isn't just to make some workers wealthy. It's to produce. They're linked together with a nonprofit corporation and a revolving fund so that some, when they make profits, they put some back to start more of these. So they're going to build the community, not just a couple workers. And they're being helped by the big hospitals and universities in that area. They buy a lot of things. There's a lot of laundry. There's a lot of food purchases. They need their roofs covered with solar installation. And they buy about, you know, there's a lot of big hospitals and universities don't get up and move. And that's probably true in your community as well. And they could, if they wanted to, begin to focus their purchases. In Cleveland, there are about $3 billion in purchasing every year, most of it not from this neighborhood, but it's beginning to move into the neighborhood. That can be done in any community. People can roll up their sleeves and start thinking about new ways to go forward that are new developments, even if the national politics is stuck. And the president could help that with various government programs he already has. And I think there may be some of that. We've been hearing about some of that beginning to help. But what I'm really talking about is rebuilding from the bottom up in a way that changes who owns the wealth. You know, the top 1% in America, the very top 1% owns about half of all the farms, factories, mines, industrial production, stocks and bonds, half of it. That's really medieval. It's very, very, very concentrated wealth. And unless we change who owns it, I don't think we'll ever change the politics. And I think the really interesting thing is that America has a very decentralized tradition of co-ops and community and of land trusts, public utilities. There's a whole set of ways that people can own things in common, but in a very American way. And I think that's what's exciting and building up at the local level.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And the optimism that you have shines through even toward the end of this conversation in the book, Gar, because you write this again on page 240, and I think, again, this goes to who we are as a country and as individuals. The current years of terrorism and war are not the first time our nation has been challenged by grave danger, nor is this the only time it has experienced great violence at home. Indeed, we have survived even civil war and losses many times those of recent years. The fundamental questions posed throughout this book may or may not be answered. They will not, however, go away. And I think that is why when you hear the quote-unquote kicking of the can down the road, you understand that it really is someone's going to have to show the leadership. Someone's going to have to be the adult and say, you know what, we're going to act on behalf of the country. And I think at that point we'll begin to see changes. Do you agree?
I do agree. And I think the real truth is the someone is, you know, it's the kind of persons who are listening to this broadcast. There isn't anybody else but individuals like us. And if we don't do it ourselves, and I'm talking, you know, hopefully to other folks who are listening, who is going to do it? So I'm very much... I write books and think about these things, but I think the bottom line is whether people decide to try to do something themselves and with their friends and neighbors and then begin going.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Gar. It's a great call to action and presented in a way that I don't think there's no one that I believe could be offended by something that's presented in a sensible way that really makes us see that, you know, if we really want the greatness that we talk about, that action is required, and to actually get into the serious issues that it's going to take to make things work the way that they should be working. I think it's a great book. Again, America Beyond Capitalism is the title, Reclaiming Our Wealth, Our Liberty, and Our Democracy. Gar Aperovitz is our guest joining us this evening. Gar, let our listeners know how they can find out more information about you. I know the book's available where books are sold as well as online, but let our listeners know how they can find out more information about you and your other work as well.
Sure. Thanks very much. The book covers things people are doing around the country, and it just reports on that. If it can be done elsewhere, it can be done anywhere. If you can do it in Cleveland, you can do it anywhere. Well, you can get the book, obviously, on Amazon, or you can just look me up. And I've got a long name, but it's easy if you start with the first part, G-A-R, Gar, and A-L is my last name, Alperovitz. It's a long name, but Gar Al. Put that together and you'll get to my webpage, which is garalperovitz.com, but that'll get you there. Otherwise, you can go to America Beyond Capitalism, one word, .org, AmericaBeyondCapitalism.org. Just string all those letters together and you can get more information on the book and on me.
Well, Gar, again, it was an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much. I'll be posting my review on Amazon this week. Anyone else who's read the book, I definitely encourage you to do that. We'll be posting the podcast this week on our website as well. So anyone who may have missed the live broadcast, they'll be able to go back and listen to the podcast. So, Gar, continued success to you, and thank you again for coming on the program.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.